thank you all for being here. And thank you to everybody for making it to the almost end of Upfront Summit, day one. So let's kick it off. Why the F are you guys still doing this?
That's it.
Alan, let's start with you.
Well, I proposed
Howard. Decided, Howard decided he's going to go.
You said Howard. Oh, you said
Alan. I said Alan.
You said Alan. Well,
all
Alan.
Good.
Our hearing goes when you get to the stage.
No judgment. Whoever wants to go.
I've always said that I go to work every morning because I'm in an elevator building, and I hope that the elevator door is going to open and the next Steve Jobs is going to walk out of it. And that's been a byline of mine for many, many years. And I, in thinking and reflecting on this conversation of why the fuck are we still in this business?
I try to be
blunt. Yeah, to be blunt. It's much more colorful that way. I've asked that quite a lot since, for those who don't know, I'll be 90 this year.
Congratulations. And you're going to live to 114.
And I'm going to live to 114, which I've written a book, which I shamelessly would say you can go buy, called No Red Lights, which is also on Audible, which I backed and started. I've started three firms in this. Yep. In this. And I started the first one in 1970, which was 54 years ago. My second one in 2006. At age 72, I think, or three. And at 85, I decided to start my third one. And I guess you'd say I've reinvented myself. I live a very, very eclectic life. I do many things. If I just did venture capital, I don't think I would keep doing it. But if I didn't do venture capitalist, I don't know what I'd wake up to and get excited about every day. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I ski, I bike ride, I rollerblade, I did the marathon. I just last year, I collect art, I invest in theater, and it goes on and on. I have a lot of children and grandchildren. So I live a very, very interesting life. And I think my energy level is such that this is the most exciting business anyone could possibly be in. Mm-hmm. Where else could you know, thank you. You can all clap for that. You're all in it. You're stuck. But, you know, to be investing in chips one day, in personal computers the next day, in cell phones the next day, and now artificial intelligence, which everyone's hot about today. Where else could you do something so exciting? I have nothing against people who have a career in a particular industry, but to me, that's a monochromatic life, and if they just stay focused at that particular field their whole life, I think they're not tasting a lot of opportunities. And yeah. I think venture capital gives you a lot of opportunities to taste everything.
Yeah. Howard, how about yourself?
No, for me, it's a little similar. By the way, Alan was the oldest person to finish the New York Marathon ever. And
wow.
And I'm a young kid at 78. I've had a number of careers, but for me, every day I want to learn something new. I want to learn something new about the world. I want to learn something new about technology. I want to know what's coming. I want to be the tech advisor to my grandkids rather than the other way around for people at my age. So I have my Vision Pro now.
Forget about that.
I've got the Vision Pro, and I know how to use TikTok and all of the above. But it is a matter of being really a lifelong learner and a lifelong nurturer. I like to mentor young people with great ideas. I did that as a professor for 15 years. I did that when we started Renaissance Technologies with Jim Simons. I did it with Idealab. Bill Gross just spoke to you. He's been an absolutely amazing entrepreneur. I was his seed investor and still on the board there and still helping him create new companies. And with Josh Koppelman at First Round Capital, creating the first seed stage fund. And when we did the seed stage fund at First Round, I said, I'll do 10 years because I want to do something else after I'm 70. And when I was 70, I helped start B Capital with Raj Ganguly and Eduardo Saverin. So I want to do something new. I want to help people both in the business world, but also the entrepreneurs. And it's kind of like they were my PhD students. When they were PhD students, you didn't have to give them very much money, and they did a lot of work for free. With entrepreneurs, you do have to give them a lot. But they can create great wealth for everyone and great ideas and great change in the world. And that's why I love doing it every day.
That's great. Ray, how about yourself?
I think a better question is, what the fuck am I doing up here with these old guys? I'm the youngest in the group. I'm 77. And I think I came into this industry about 23 years ago. So I'm a late bloomer. I ran companies. That's what I like to do. I was groomed by IBM to think that you're destined to be a CEO of a large company. And that's what I wanted to do. And I wanted to run IBM. I wanted to run Booz Allen. I wanted to run EDS. I worked directly for Ross Perot for a number of years. He taught me a lot of things. So that's kind of, and then when I left Oracle, I was 52 and had a baby and a two-year-old. And my wife said, well, you know, the opportunities were there to go run another big company like an HP or something. And I said, you know, I don't think I want to do that. I don't know why. I can't explain why I can't do it or what that I don't want to do it, but I want to be home more. Mm. I want it when the kids grow up, I want to be around. And so the guys at the partners at Kleiner asked me to come over. I knew a few of them, and they asked me to come over and just hang out. That's what you do in venture capital. Just come over and hang out, see how you like it. Mm. Well, I'm not going to hang out. It's either I'm in or I'm not. And I really hated venture capital when I was running Oracle. Because venture capitalists would just steal all my people, and I would tell them they'll be back in 5 years after they wash out. And but it took me 3 years. Fell in love with it. I agree with what both Alan and Howard said. It's an opportunity to see something different every day. It's not Groundhog Day like running a company. There's benefits to running a company. If I do it over again, and I was 40 years old, 30 years old, I'd probably still run a company. But I have enjoyed this coming in at 52, having something to give back. It's made it much easier for me to think about generation change because I really don't have much to prove. Mm-hmm. And so when I look at young people who want to come up and be a partner in our firm, I'm willing to say, let me help you. Let me get behind you and help you. So
yeah.
At this age, it is what you're doing and what you focus on as opposed to the whole thing. I'm not spending hours and hours and hours on diligence calls. I'm not, but I love the hunt. I love the competition. I love finding an entrepreneur with a great idea and all the things that Bill talked about.
Yeah. Can I ask, and you know, if I can say that the three of you have been emerging managers in the last 8 to 10 years. You've raised brand new platforms in the last 8 to 10 years, and some even more recently than that. I know, Alan, you raised Primetime 5 years ago.
I'm just in the process of starting raising Primetime too.
Lots of LPs.
And you have to, good. And you have to realize that a fund is a 10-year fund. So you really got to believe that I am going to live to 114.
We believe it. I read the book. We believe it.
So 10 years for me is nothing. I mean, you know,
totally.
I'll get through the investment period and you know, like every other fund, it'll take 13 or 14 years to liquidate.
Yeah, well, the reason I was asking the question on emerging managers is we do have a lot of emerging managers in the room right now and people going out and raising Fund 1, but you have past experiences. What is fundraising like today for all of you individually? Maybe we can start with Ray, in the last 5 to 10 years versus when Kleiner went out to do it, when you joined them and first round and Graycroft and Apax.
I think a lot, the more, you know, the bigger this industry gets and the older it gets, the less it changes. I think it's the essential elements of fundraising, deploying capital, managing with, you know, relationships with LPs and entrepreneurs. Nothing really has changed, but the people in the industry have changed. And I think a lot of people have come into this industry and have a shorter term view, and it's always been a longer term business.
Mm-hmm.
You don't build a business. There are businesses that have been built in 2 years, yes, but that's not what we're in business to do. It takes a long time to build a great business. And that is the focus, is to build great business. So you have to take a long-term view. We started in 2015. We're now raising our fourth fund. And so it's $1.5 billion worth of capital deployed across 60, 70 companies. And we all know that 10 of those companies are going to really, you know, make the difference. But it is just getting in the trenches with these CEOs and fighting the battles. I can't think of in 25 years, these guys are going to have longer to, I can't think of 25 years of a company who ended up executing the plan they showed me. Everybody pivots. Everybody goes through tough times. Even Google. Okay, when we funded Google, you know, it wasn't until the business model, they actually discovered the business model to go with the technology and pivot the company. Tom Siebel's pivoted C3 four times. He's a great entrepreneur. And so when you're fundraising now, I think it depends on what do you bring with you? Why would people give you money? Typically, there'd be a principal track record to bet on. So what did you do before that says I should give you money? That has not changed since the beginning. You don't have to really be a venture capitalist. You can maybe be like I was coming from industry, but I had a track record of increasing Oracle's multiple, many, many times. And so I could raise money based on that. So I think it really is based on the principles that are raising the money and the track record. So if you don't have a track record and you're trying to raise money and build a firm, go get somebody that has a track record and make them your partner. So. Yeah.
Howard, I actually want to ask you a slightly different version of that question, which is to the point that Ray made, not that much has changed. What has changed? Fundraising aside, maybe broadly, what has changed in an industry where we're investing in innovation, but have we been innovating?
Well, I think there has been some innovation, but it's been a much slower pace than the people we invest in. So when Josh and I started First Round, it was the first seed stage fund. Nobody was doing organized seed stage investing. It was angels, friends and family and angel money before you went to the professionals like Apex and people like that. And that changed. We started First Round in late 04, early 05. And by 2010, there were 1,000 seed stage funds. Not all of them made it, but it changed by creating a new category. And then they became pre-seed funds. And so what's changed is there's been more stratification of money. You've got the solo GPs, many of whom have 10, 20, $30 million and really have to invest at a very early stage to be able to make a good return. So they're pre-seed. And their fundraising is from family offices and high net worth individuals. And then you have the funds between sort of 50 and 200 million, which is really the sweet spot and usually provides the best returns to investors in the long term for a lot of reasons. And those can get a few small institutions. And at First Round, we kept our funds under 200 million until very recently when Josh and the team raised a bigger fund. And that was the way to do it at the seed stage. And then what changed pretty dramatically in the zero interest rate world was if you were gonna get zero interest rates from T-bills, then you want more risk. And so money poured into the venture space and you got funds that got much bigger. And at B Capital, our first fund was $360 million as a growth fund, not a seed stage fund. And our current fund, current growth fund is a $2.1 billion growth fund because that money is available and it's a different class of investor that you're fundraising from. And our early stage fund, the Ascent Fund, we're raising Ascent 3 right now, is about a $500 million fund. And that is meant to be seed and A. And what's changed is that stratification. So there's a lot more places now to go for money, depending on what size you are. And there's a lot more willingness on the family office side in particular to fund solo GPs.
Yeah. And Alan, another version of in the vein of fundraising, what is fundraising like today for you? Are you on a plane? Are you talking to LPs? Are you doing it on Zoom? And how'd you do it for Apex One?
Apex One, which at that time the firm was called Alan Patrikoff Associates. We eventually, when we went international, added an X, APAX, and that's how we got the name of Apex. You have to understand, when I started in the business in 1970, the venture capital industry had not started. Mm-hmm. It was not even called venture capital. Intel's chip had just come out a year or two before that. I went through the whole PC revolution. I went through the cellular revolution. I went through, the storage revolution. I've been through almost everything, and now, of course, the AI revolution. So that's what makes it a very exciting life of having lived through all these stages in our area. When we started out, you were raising money for something that no one even knew what it was about. And remember, I was on the East Coast. This was not West Coast high tech. Silicon Valley was not part of it. So it took a lot of scratching around to raise that money. Eventually, what I raised was $2.3 million. Today, Apax runs $73 billion. So you can imagine over a period of time, it got bigger and bigger and bigger. And of course, morphed from being a venture firm into being a private equity firm. Right now, Primetown Partners 2 is really pioneering. It's our second fund, and we're focused on a new area. It sounds like it's been around forever, but it's new in terms of its white space, in terms of investing, which is we invest in any products, services, and experiences for the aging population, which is the fastest growing part of the population, unrelated to my age. you don't have to take my word for it. There are so many indicators. I mean, the cover of Business Week was longevity 3 weeks ago. The cover of The Economist was longevity. People are now much more focused on how they can live longer, what they can do to extend their life. So it's a new area, and people were at early stage, seed fund, through A rounds. And it's a slog like it was
really?
Back then, because it's a new idea. I am fairly reasonably successful in raising money. Everyone says to me, Alan, you make it look so easy. You did this in 3 months or 6 months. I always remind them, I did it in 50 years in 3 months. And yeah. Don't kid
right,
yourself.
Exactly right.
It's your
Kleiner and Perkins, as it was called back then, not KP1 or 2 or Kleiner. You know, Kleiner and Perkins was an $8 million fund, one LP. In Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and they were
in Pittsburgh,
huh?
They raised it in Pittsburgh.
They raised it in Pittsburgh.
Wow. I didn't know that.
From Hillman, Henry Hillman.
Oh, they got the money from Pittsburgh.
Yeah, from Pittsburgh. Yeah, and they put the first check into Genentech, a couple hundred thousand dollars. They were, you know, fairly good at what they did in industry before they went into what they didn't know was venture capital. It was tough fundraising. And it's tough. Fundraising never gets easy. There are some that are good at it, you know, that are really good at it. And there's a lot of money looking for a home. That there always has been.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's for sure true. And particularly today, there, because of again the interest rate environment, even at 5%, there are a lot of money looking for the 15 plus percent returns that you can hopefully get out of good venture capital. And that money is there. With first round, we were very lucky. We raised the first couple of funds. We raised the first the same size as Kleiner and Perkins, which was $7 or $8 million. And then slowly but surely accumulated $50 million. And then we decided we'd make it a real fund. And we went for $125 million. And we went up to meet Dave Swenson, who's the legendary Yale portfolio manager, Yale chief investment officer, who passed away recently. Yeah. And he basically said to us, look, I love what you're doing, the seed stage investing, but I've got a $15 billion endowment. Mm-hmm. I can put $20 million in your fund. It can't do anything for me, but I'll do it because I want to take the chance. Now, it turned out that fund returned $1 billion to him. So it did did work out. It had Uber in it. It had Roblox in it. It had a bunch of other great, great companies. But it is true that there's a lot of money now that wants to be in venture. Yep. So it's actually easier raising. But you have to have the right message that resonates with the particular investor.
Specifically, I was approached by one of our CEO, the CEO that I invested in when I was a Kleiner, and he said, Ray, let's start a firm together. I like to do it in kind of the style with which I've worked with you. And so two things were important. One is we had to have, and I wanted to wait 6 months to a year to make sure we had the strategy right. We were going to be operators masquerading as venture capitalists. Mm-hmm. So that resonated with LPs and with entrepreneurs. Yeah. Secondly, we went to family offices. We didn't think we could go to big funds and go through the checkbox process and as a new fund. So we went to family offices and they really loved the story. So have a strategy, have a message, have a plan for why you're going to be different. How many venture capital firms are in the U.S. now? Over 1,000, right?
Well over 1,000.
Almost 2,000.
Yeah.
Almost 2,000.
Yeah. So, you know, that's doubled in the last 10 years. So you have to have a different message.
So what you're saying is it's hard no matter what.
Yeah,
so
I would
do
say,
not complain.
The market favors new firms too.
I would say
the market wants to see new principles in the business.
I would say for a first-time firm fund, be realistic about your estimation of what size you should be and how long it's going to take. It isn't a three-month project. It's usually much multiple of that. Yeah. And I always coach people, don't go out and raise a number that you're going to come in less than. Always put in your cover a number that you're going to exceed. And I think that's the way you should build each successive fund. Don't get too greedy.
Well, I do have a couple more questions. Maybe we can just talk a little bit about this hype cycle that we're in and kind of the progression that we've seen. And maybe just talking a little bit about the pace of these hypes, of the last couple of hype cycles that we've been in. Has it accelerated? Has it been much faster than what you saw over the last, you know, 40, 50 years of investing? Or is this somewhat unique to the
time?
We've
had hype cycles since I started the business in 1970, and it comes and everybody gets excited and they overinvest, and then we have setbacks. And while I'm very excited about AI, I think it's probably the most significant revolution that I've seen in the business. My own opinion is there's going to be excessive amounts of money put into it. There's going to be excessive valuations, and there are going to be some people who will actually lose money as a result of going into basic technology, AI field. I think finding applications for it is a whole different kettle of fish, which I would think would be much more interesting and sustainable on a long-term basis.
We I remember in 82, 83, we looked at 300 companies in the PC industry. Each one of them only wanted 1% of the market. So in the end, that didn't quite work out that way.
It happened in the disk drive business.
It happened in the disk drive business a few years later. It happened in the networking hardware a few years later, and then in the cell phone industry. So it's a constant. What does happen sometimes is when you get a big bubble, as we did in 97 through 2000, and you get way overspending. So you got MCI and Global, and you put fiber everywhere, and they lost hundreds of billions of dollars. But that fiber then became the backbone for the internet a few years later when everybody could buy it for zero. So you had free fiber that was paid for by the losses of the venture capitalists along the way. And I think we're starting, and then we saw a few more of those cycles, obviously, the social networking one being one of them.
You know, however, my memory may not be perfect, but the one cycle I don't think ended up with a bust was the cell phone industry. I mean, when we went into cell phones, we made investment in the first cell phone company, I think it was 1983. At that time, AT&T and Motorola, who bid on Spectrum, estimated that the penetration would ultimately be 1 or 2%.
Yeah.
And today, it's probably 98%.
I was a partner of Booz Allen and managed a study to produce. McKinsey did the same thing, to basically forecast the cell phone marketplace. We were off by a factor of 100.
Yeah.
And I don't think there were as many losses in that particular area of investment.
That's probably not. But I think right now in the AI and people going into generative AI infrastructure plays are going to lose a lot of money.
Yeah.
But as Alan said, people going into the right applications, there are amazing applications of that. The same thing is true in robotics. Humanoid robotics, I think, is huge right now.
The little robots over there, too.
There they are. They're not humanoid.
They're the Cocos.
But they do work well, and they're great. But we do see that cycle continuing. And right now, the hype cycle is AI, infrastructure, and so on. There's some hyping coming in robotics. We're starting to see Figure and a few others. I think we'll have humanoid robots pretty soon. But it's, as Bill Gross said much earlier, it's all about timing. I mean, in Idealab in 99, 2000, we had a number of amazing companies, which are today gigantic companies. It's just not ours. Ours went bust because the timing was too early. But the later company that started 5 or 10 years later, when the market was ready. So in 99, 2000, we had basically 100 million people on 56K dial-up lines. You can't stream entertainment. We had a streaming entertainment company called Z.com. It was a wonderful idea. It was Netflix streaming in 1999. The hardware didn't support it. The world couldn't do it. Fast forward 25 years, all of a sudden, you can do that. Yeah. And that's what keeps happening over and over.
VR is trying that right now, right? That's the egg that's still being laid.
Yep.
Yeah. We could keep chatting. There's 15 other questions that I have on my sheet in front of me. But maybe one thing to sort of leave the audience with, what's the one thing you're looking forward to the most over the next 10 to 15 years? Personal, well, professional.
Accomplishing. I just got married, by the way.
Wait,
I
need
just
a minute.
Got married.
You just got married.
My wife is in the audience. Yeah.
Alan, what? How old were you when you got married?
I was 88 years old.
Congratulations.
89. No, I was 89 years old. I just got married. And I promised her 25 years of marriage. So
incredible.
So what am I looking forward to? I'm looking to fulfill my promise. I'm looking forward to completing Primetime 2. I have a brilliant partner, woman. I'm very proud of one more than anything else. I formed Primetime with a woman. I formed Greycroft with a woman who's maybe in the
right
audience,
there.
Dana Sobel. And I formed my first firm with a woman named Pat Clarity, who went on to great fame also. I guess you would say I kind of broke the ice on women in this business.
Howard?
Well, I'm looking forward to be at Alan's 114th birthday. and doing a lot of work in longevity and also being my spouse of 56 years now, of being there to see our grandkids and our hopefully great-grandkids and so on. Get the benefits of all the technology that I've helped bring into this world. And it's wonderful to see my grandkids. Every year at Christmas, they wait for what technology toy I'm going to give them. And I debated this year. I did not give them Vision Pros. They weren't quite ready. But it is a joy to just still be part of the world. And so I'm doing investing in longevity technologies that will help people all over the world live a much longer and healthier life in that last 20 years. Yep. We spend so much money earlier, but now we're learning that we need to spend the money and people need to.
Can I add one thing, Howard? I'm sorry, I didn't mean that. If you buy my thesis that we're going to live to 114, and by the way, today they would say you'd live to 120. That's really scientists say. At 60, you've only lived half your life. Keep that in mind.
Yeah.
So start thinking about what you're going to do with with the second half of your life. We're going to invest in companies to take care of you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm lucky enough to have a second set of kids. My oldest kids are in their 40s, and I have some kids in their 20s. And so when they were born, you know, they were pretty much automatic since 100 years old or over 100 years old, primarily because of body part replacements, but also a lot of things that they can do to take care of themselves. It took me into a new field. I mean, I've been in the technology field all my life, information technology, and it took me into food tech. Mm-hmm. And I've really become a foodie. I've become investing in the sector, and it's gone through ups and downs and everything. But to answer your question, if I could just freeze time, do what I'm doing today. Mm-hmm. I don't want anything more. I'd love working what I'm doing, the family I have, I just could freeze time and just have this day over and over and over again. It'd be wonderful because our business allows us to do new things every day.
You gonna do your fire questions?
I'm not gonna do my fire round questions.
She wanted to ask me who I would like to play myself in the movies.
I did want to ask him that.
And I was all set to tell you.
What would be the title?
My answer would be Shaquille O'Neal.
What? All right, on that note, thank you all, and thank you all for joining us on this panel.